Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? You're listening to Around the World with Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more on Around the World with Dan Perry.
My wife, Katie, and I have been living in an apartment here in Beijing, China for the last 3 years, or at least close to it. And we're planning to go home to the U.S. for the summer before starting our big long year adventure. And I guess when we moved here, we came with not too much stuff, although it kind of felt like a lot. I think we had 5 suitcases total between the two of us. But a huge portion of that was our climbing gear that we brought, and then our camping gear. We brought a tent, we brought a stove and pots and sleeping bags, mattresses. And this was stuff that we kind of knew we wouldn't use all the time, but we definitely wanted to go climbing whenever we could and then camping on the weekends. And so we tried to keep it kind of minimal when we came here. We had an understanding that this was going to be a temporary existence. And also that, you know, it's one of the biggest cities in the world. I mean, you can pick up just about anything you want here. There was really no need to bring a lot of stuff. But it's weird because we did, even though we knew we'd only be here for a short time, we still accumulated a lot of stuff. I hesitate to call it junk because, it's really useful. Like things like silverware and bowls and, you know, appliances for the kitchen. And chairs and furniture, things like that. But now the time has come to move out pretty soon, and we just wanted to get rid of a lot of this stuff. So we had a come take our shit party yesterday. We invited some of our friends over and just put out everything that we no longer needed on the table, and people just grabbed what they wanted. And we had a fun afternoon of good conversations with some of the people we've become really close friends with over the last few years, and even a few people that we just met. So this was just it felt really good to just know that all the stuff that we have is not just going to go in a dumpster. It's going to keep being used by somebody else. And then when they move, they'll hopefully do the same kind of thing. And we also had some fun with this little party. Some of the bigger items we made people do like games and competitions to see who would win. So we had like wall sits to give away chairs, and our really big bamboo plant that looks kind of like a tree. We had a competition where we had the two people who wanted it had to do tree pose, a yoga pose, for as long as possible. They were just standing out there doing like a stare off. Anyway, now that this party is done and most of our stuff is gone, you know what? I thought our apartment would just look like cavernous at this point, but it still looks pretty full. It's just bizarre how easy it is to build up a lot of stuff. So I can only imagine, like people who have lived in a house for many decades, how much stuff they must have accumulated when we've only been here for a couple of years. But I think this is a good process to go through every now and then, just this renewal. And pretty soon, in about 2 weeks, we're just going to throw whatever we really need into a couple of suitcases and take those home. And anything that we still have in the apartment, we'll just give it away to our neighbors or put it on the curb, whatever. People will definitely pick it up here because it is Beijing after all. It's been an awesome time living here in Beijing, China. One of the greatest things that I've enjoyed here is the convenience of this neighborhood specifically. You know, you can just walk outside and get whatever you want. The other day, Katie wanted me to buy an eggplant for dinner that she just spontaneously wanted to make. And there was no need to get in my car and drive for half an hour to the grocery store. I just went downstairs and bought an eggplant. Round trip time is 2 minutes. What else do we have to do? We had to get our visas to go to Russia. So we needed some to get our photos taken and some copies made. So I just, or both of us just ran down to a copy shop, 5-minute walk, and got that done really quick. And even if that shop had been closed, there's another copy shop in the other direction, a 5-minute walk. So it's really whatever you need is in this neighborhood, which is awesome. I mean, the downside is there are a lot of people, so that can be overwhelming. And sometimes I do like to just come home and sit here by myself and just kind of rejuvenate and relax. Beijing is, well, from the Fifth Ring Road is a circle, and it's probably about 12 miles from Tiananmen Square, which is at the center of the city. So imagine imagine that, a circle with a radius of 12 miles, and within that area there's something like 20 million people. It's just a crazy amount of people, and my whole state of Wisconsin only has like 5 million people, and that's an entire state. So you can imagine all of the conveniences that come with having that many people in a small area. Like public transportation is excellent, and even that being said, I don't even really use public transportation very much because I can just bike everywhere. The distances are short enough. Whereas at home, there's virtually zero public transportation, and I don't know what Katie and I are going to do this summer. We're going to be home for like 6 weeks, and do we get a car? Do we rent a car? Try to borrow one? We almost certainly will need to have a car. So it's, I don't know, it's a little isolating, a little stranding to kind of be in a place without that many people. But at the same time, it's super easy to get away and just be alone, be in nature. That's really easy. Whereas it's really hard here in Beijing. So anywhere you go, there's good things and bad things. But after we are home for a while, in August, we're going to take off for our big year-long adventure, and I plan to keep on updating this podcast, meet new people along the way and talk to them, and maybe I'll make some longer introductions like this one and just kind of explain where we've gone, tell some stories. I might even do some solo podcasts where I just, you know, talk for an hour or so. I'm kind of still feeling things out with this podcast, figuring out where I want to take it, which is exciting because it's kind of this new big project for me. My other big project, my book, is coming along as usual. Probably another month or so, it should be close to ready. Anyway, let's get on to the main part of the show. My guest today is Lisa Gay, and I literally just met her 2 minutes before we started recording this show, but I felt super comfortable just jumping in and talking with her. She was great. She's been living in China for a while, and she's also lived in Japan for a number of years. So she gave Katie and me some great advice on places we can go. We're planning to bike around Japan as part of our big upcoming trip. But we just had a great talk about travel, about different places. So let's jump into our discussion with Lisa Gay. Why don't we start out with you telling me a little bit about this trip coming up?
Okay, so basically, so let me give a little bit of a background. So I actually was the travel editor for City Weekend.
Oh, so that's like a local magazine.
It's a local magazine here, mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it was great in that I got to read other people's stories, but I had not much time to go out during that time. I would travel a lot before I took the gig. And then now I'm going to plan to do a lot of traveling afterwards. But when you're actually doing the job, there's not many opportunities. So you're just getting things from freelancers, basically. So I just have about a month left on my visa. So I'm just like, I'm just going to use it to travel kind of the more remote parts that it's just really hard to get to.
Parts of China, you mean?
Parts of China, yes.
So where are you going?
So, well, I'm flying to Chengdu. I'm flying to Chengdu, and then I want to go to Ganzi, and I want to go to kind of the Tibetan part of Sichuan, because it's okay. Easy to get to. You don't need, like, all the kind of permits.
Right, yeah.
So that's basically my plan, is to go to the Tibetan part of Sichuan and then go up to Gansu mm-hmm. as well, and the Tibetan parts in Gansu. And then I want to kind of continue north somehow. So I haven't figured out the route yet, but I want to continue north and maybe see the Dunhuang, the Buddhist grottos. So,
right.
So that's the kind of route that I'm thinking about. And then maybe kind of swing back to Beijing via Xi'an.
Okay. Have you been to any of these places yet?
I've been to Chengdu.
Yeah.
I have been to Chengdu. Yeah. I quite like Chengdu. I think everyone likes Chengdu. I don't think I've ever heard anyone say, you know, that they hated it. Maybe they hated the weather, but...
Yeah, I just spent a couple days there. It was pretty cool. I like the pandas.
Pandas are amazing. Well, plus, like, the way that they do it is quite, you know, I mean, it feels very up close, but it doesn't feel like a zoo.
Totally.
Still, yeah.
I was a little leery of going there because I've just heard how bad the zoos can be in China with, you know, animal rights. And I'm like, oh, do I want to watch this? But they actually give the pandas a ton of space.
Yeah.
It just feels, it feels like almost as good as they can do.
As good as it can get while still seeing the pandas up close.
Right. While allowing humans to see them, yeah.
Exactly. You know, we still get to see them. So, and then the interesting thing is I've actually went to Beijing Zoo probably, I'm going to say 14 years ago I went.
Oh, yeah?
Not impressed, obviously. And this is before I kind of knew the really dark side of, you know, the kind of Chinese zoos. I really didn't understand a lot what was going on back then, but now it's just like really horrible, you know. So I would not recommend anyone to go to Beijing Zoo.
Yeah, and I guess I've just found in, I've gone to a few zoos in like South America too, and they're hit and miss, but mostly miss. It's just, it's always been depressing for me.
Yeah.
It's not just China.
It's not just China. I guess the good thing too about the Panda, you know, Conservation Center, I don't know if that's the official name, but I'm just going to call it that right now.
Whatever it's called, yeah.
Yeah. Is that, you know, it does make use of the natural environment that they live in, right? So it's not like they're transplanted into a completely different environment and have to,
you know,
adjust for that. And so I always think that if zoos were kind of more mindful of that, you know, like kind of understood where they were and what kind of animals would work best in that environment, it could work out.
Yeah, it's totally sad to see like a polar bear in the middle of summer, like in the States, and it's just kind of laying there out in the sun. Like, oh God, this poor thing is just sweating and
right?
Oh, it's awful.
Yeah.
So yeah, but pandas are exclusively from Sichuan, is that right?
I think so. I'm not sure of their range, but they are very limited, obviously. I mean, because of the, I mean, I'm not a biologist by any means, but yeah.
Right.
I don't think that they're outside of Sichuan.
Yeah, I just think it's kind of cool that they used to be these legendary creatures, right? Like, weren't they, people didn't really believe they were real?
Yeah, I heard something about that.
It's almost like a Bigfoot type thing. Like, imagine they found Bigfoot.
Yeah.
But they found the pandas.
Which is kind of cuter. And,
yeah,
you know,
totally.
I would love that discovery. And it kind of seems hard when you're watching the pandas because it's like they're not very elusive when you're seeing them in the center. You know, like they're rolling around, they're falling off things, like they're quite
so
unwieldy.
Funny.
Yeah, so you can't imagine that they're like super stealthy and they're hiding. It just must have been their habitat was really in the deep pockets of bamboo pockets somewhere. Maybe that's
I know they must not have many predators either because they're black and white and they're hiding in this green bamboo. I mean, they're not very camouflaged.
Yeah,
they're not very fast.
So yeah, it just makes me wonder, like, you know, like
so totally. I probably should have learned more when I went there.
Yeah, well, I mean, you do learn, I think, enough. And the fact is that, like, it seems like they have like a healthy rate of pandas being born. There's always like, it always seems like they have like some newborns or like some little pandas creeping about. So
yeah, that's good to know.
Yeah.
They're not going extinct at least.
Well, you know, they're not going to go extinct as long as people, I think, are committed to the panda cause.
Well, so the really sad thing is, you know, they're only here because they're cute. I mean, if they were ugly, they would have been extinct a long time ago.
Yeah. Or, you know, useful in medicine.
Right. So let's see. How long are you going to travel for?
I'm thinking about 3 weeks. To be honest, like, the way I travel is pretty inefficient in that I like to have like a base. Like, Chengdu is the base, and then I like kind of see where I can go from there. So it's not super planned out, and I had the luxury of doing that because I don't have a job to go back to. So the time isn't kind of long or short. I mean, it's only really restricted by my visa.
Oh, you only have like 1 month, you said?
Yeah.
Left.
I have 1 month left on my visa. So, I mean, it's not hard to get a tourist visa, but it's also kind of a pain these days.
Yeah. I wonder if you could do it from China, too. It just seems kind of backwards.
Yeah, there's like a way to convert your work visa into a tourist visa, but then like it's not, you know, multiple entry, which is kind of like, if I was going to get a tourist visa, I'd want multiple entry, right?
Right.
You know, so that's why I talked to Katie, I was like, oh, you know, like I might go up to Gansu, I might go down to Yunnan, like we'll see, like there's some possible routes. But then I thought like, you know, maybe I'll just save Yunnan for like a tourist visa so I can hop across Southeast Asia.
Oh yeah, yeah, totally. I've done that. I've gone from Vietnam into Yunnan.
Yeah, how long does that train take?
I went from south to north.
Okay.
So I went all the way from Saigon all the way to Beijing by train. And
so how long did that take?
Well, it's like two overnight rides to get through Vietnam. And then when you get to the very north of Vietnam, there's what's the name? I forget the name of the city. It's near Sapa. Mm-hmm. You can just like walk across the city and walk over the bridge into China. From there, from the border to get to Kunming is probably like 5 or 6 hours.
Yeah.
From Kunming to Chengdu is another overnight train.
Exactly.
Chengdu to Xi'an's overnight, and then Xi'an to Beijing is overnight.
That's kind of the problem with West China is it's the distances are longer than you think.
Yeah, they're huge.
Yeah. And because it's like, I think when you're living in the eastern part of China, you kind of get a little bit spoiled with the high-speed rail. So like these distances, I mean, I was in China at the time when it took like 10 hours to get from Beijing to Shanghai.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And now it's been cut in half, basically.
It has, but in some ways it's less convenient, as weird as that might sound, to have a train that's twice as fast. Because those trains don't run at night.
That is true. So you're not getting the overnight stay.
Yeah. You used to be able to leave Beijing after work. Well, you still could, but there's not as many trains.
Yeah.
You just leave after work at 5 or Friday night, like 5 o'clock, let's say, then get to Shanghai the next morning, and then you've got all day. But now if you miss that last high-speed rail after work or whatever on Friday night, you can't go to Shanghai till Saturday morning.
No, I get it. And it's kind of annoying how there's no the overnight trains kind of. Because I was actually looking to take a train to Chengdu, because they have a high-speed rail now to Chengdu.
Oh, do they? Okay.
They do. And it cuts like about 10 hours off the trip. Mm-hmm. I was looking into that, but then at the end of the day, I mean, it's the high-speed rail is not convenient because, as you were saying, it's not overnight, so you still feel like you're just stuck in a train losing time.
Yeah.
Like, maybe if I had broken it up and I was going to do this stop and that stop, then maybe it was more tolerable, but...
Yeah.
But the high-speed rail is making a lot of options. So I was also thinking on a separate trip to start in Shanghai and take the new Shanghai Kunming high-speed rail.
Oh, okay.
And maybe stopping in Changsha, right in the middle, which would break it up quite nicely. And Changsha is kind of, it's got great food.
Yeah. Is that the closest city to Yellow Mountain? Huangshan? I don't remember, but
no, that's I feel like a lot of people use that city as a jumping off point for Zhangjiajie.
Oh, Zhangjiajie, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been there yet?
I have been there. Unfortunately, it was really hazy, so really wasn't as nice as the pictures suggested.
Oh, you gotta go back.
I do.
I just got really lucky. I just got clear weather, and I loved it. Totally.
I see
those
pictures
it.
Now. Oh, man.
I know. Because
mine were about worthless.
Right. But anyway, yeah, train travel. I love traveling by train in China in general. And it's like, I kind of don't view it as sitting in a train wasting time. You know, it's like the journey. As opposed to just flying somewhere.
Everyone, like, yeah, exactly.
You know, on a plane, it's this. If you could just, instead of taking the airplane and... it's the same amount as money. You just snap your fingers and you're there. You would always do that.
Right? Yeah, you would.
But with trains, it's like, I'd actually rather be on the train than just snap my fingers and be there, because I get to see everything along the way and really experience the countryside.
No, you have a point there. And also, like, I actually had talked to someone else about this. I also just hate flying in general. So I'm only just doing this because I literally have to be in Chengdu on Monday for... on events. So, yeah. So I can understand it. And also, we all have train stories, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. Especially when you take the cheaper trains or the go like hard sleeper, you're always going to meet some interesting people.
That's
always
interesting. Yeah, or it's just going to be like an intense experience. Like, you know, like probably my worst one that I can think of is like, I think about 10 years ago, I was going, there was no Shanghai-Beijing high-speed rail. There was like hardly any tickets left. I think it was like the end of like maybe Chinese New Year or something. And I needed to get back to Beijing. And so I bought this ticket and it was a standing ticket. So standing all the way to Beijing. And luckily, like the standing tickets aren't as harsh as you think because of how like, you know, some people will give you seats for a while. Some people will vacate the seat. Sometimes like you see people like under the seats or on top of the, like I remember in the luggage rack, you'd see a dude sleeping.
Really? Oh,
yeah, I remember that. Oh. Yeah, like I've seen it on trains where like I wasn't standing, but other people were. I don't know why. Yeah, I'm always traveling Chinese New Year too. It's crazy.
Oh, right. That's,
you know, it's intense. Like you see people like on the racks, you see people below, like, you know, like every conceivable space.
God. Was that during the day at least? So you weren't trying to sleep in that condition?
No, it was both day and night. So it was like, it was a long haul, we'll say.
When we first moved here like three years ago, most of my travels have been in South America.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of trains in South America. There's buses everywhere though.
Yeah.
And it's super easy. You don't need to plan in advance. You can just go to the bus station. There's buses every hour. I mean, between the big cities.
Yeah.
So there's no need to buy tickets in advance.
Yeah.
But in China, we didn't realize that with trains, especially on holidays,
they
sell out way in advance. And so we still wanted to travel, so we ended up taking hard seat a bunch of times overnight.
Yeah, those are brutal because they don't even shut off the lights.
Right.
You know, the lights are on all night.
And as soon as you get kind of start falling asleep, like with your elbow propped up on the table, then like, you know, five guys are going to walk in like smoking cigarettes and drinking baijiu and playing cards behind you.
Just flicking their sunflower seed shells in your general direction.
Right. On one of these, I was just so tired. I'm like, the floor is just so nasty because everyone's
so
throwing
sticky.
Stuff on it.
There's no sense of like, well, that's like the chaos part of it, right? There's like everyone's everywhere. Everything's everywhere.
It's in your face. Everything is. But at one point I was just like, screw it. I'm just going to go on the floor and sleep. I can't sleep sitting up. And so I just went underneath the seat.
See, it turns out it's a great place to take a nap.
It actually is. Yeah. For a little bit. I mean, it's a hard floor.
Yeah.
You can't really roll on your side. It's like, you know, the seats are too low, but you can sneak under it.
Yeah.
Like you're a mechanic going under a car or something.
You just happen to like, just take a nap while I'm down here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's always good stories though with the train journeys. So, and
more
China's,
so than buses. I think
so. Yeah.
You know, like my bus story has been like just me being uncomfortable for hours upon hours.
Right.
So.
Although, some parts like, have you been to like Argentina, for example?
See, I haven't traveled the Americas very much.
Okay.
I've been in Asia for quite a long time now. Yeah. So about 14 years, in fact. So all my travel has been in Asia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, let's come back to that, but just briefly, in Argentina and Chile especially.
Yeah.
Some of the buses there are so unbelievably like nice.
Really?
I mean, they're like first class airplane seats. They fold down completely flat.
Wow.
They're only three seats across instead of four, so they're a lot bigger than normal.
Yeah.
They give you blankets and everyone's got their own TV screen.
Is it because everyone, like, even middle-class people will travel on them?
Yeah, that's part of it.
Okay.
It's not, travel's not just for poor people in those countries. It's for anybody, really. And there are the crappy buses, but honestly, in Argentina, especially Argentina, the really, really nice buses are totally affordable.
Right.
They're not that expensive at all.
So, like, you're not saving that much by taking the cheaper buses.
Right.
Yeah.
And there are cheaper countries than Argentina, but it's just kind of a good bang for your buck country.
Oh man, bus travel. You know, that really helps when the middle class takes buses. This is actually about America. So to go on a tangent here about bus travel.
Sure.
Specifically, I remember like my worst bus travel story was in America. And even though I've lived in China, I've had some like really crappy bus, you know, bus trips in China. My worst one was in America. My boyfriend, now husband, he's from Europe, so he's used to bus travel. And bus travel, I think, is again like a lot of people do it, so it's not so you know, they're more
like there's no stigma against.
There's no stigma, kinda. And also like the bus companies will treat you like a human being.
Yeah.
So my husband was like, "You're just, you know," like I told him, like, "Let's just rent a car. Let's not take the bus. You know, it's really inconvenient." He's like, "No, you're just being an American. You know, we're gonna take the bus. It'll be fine. You'll see." Yeah. And then he had to eat his words later. So yeah, like because the first thing is that like I realized traveling Greyhound, we booked online. We booked a time. We booked a time slot, 11:30 p.m. That's like the last bus of the night.
Sure.
So we're like, great.
Where were you going from and to?
We were going from Cleveland to Chicago.
Okay.
Overnight. And our friends dropped us at the station. We had our tickets. And we're going in. We're waiting in line into the bus that we're supposed to get on. And then at a certain point, the line stops. And then the bus drives away. And then we asked the people. We're like, what happened? Like, our ticket's 11:30. Is there another bus coming? They're like, no, the next bus is tomorrow morning.
Oh my God.
And we're like, but our tickets say 11:30. And they're like, yeah, well, that doesn't, you know, like that's. And I'm like, like, why make me think that I can get on this bus at 11:30?
Right.
If there's like a good possibility that I won't. And they're like, and, you know, so like I was like stuck overnight in this bus terminal and a lot of other people were stuck there
too. Oh, because your friends dropped you off, so you couldn't just go home.
I couldn't just go home. You know, because it was late at night, and I was like, oh, they're probably sleeping. I mean, we'll just be here in the morning. And then, so we're overnight, you know, and they're always, like, shouting at you. They're always yelling at you and get in line. And then the morning comes, and then, like, so we're like, okay, we're, like, third in line. Well, surely we'll make the 5:30 bus or whatever time it was, right, the first one of the day. And then the two bus drivers were arguing over who was going to drive the route. So it was delayed again.
Like they don't have it figured out in advance?
Right. Oh, and so that delayed us. And then we finally got on the bus. And I was so indignant. I was just like, when we got to Chicago, I was like, this was the worst service ever. You know, like no one cared about, like, you know, how they were treating us. Like they were just, you know, they were so dismissive of our concerns, right? And they're like, okay, you need to call this number. And I'm like, okay, great. And it was like it wasn't a toll-free number.
What?
Yeah, it's
you have to pay to call them
to complain.
Oh my God.
So we didn't. That was actually too memorable because that was also the time when a Greyhound bus in Canada, there was like that kind of incident where like a guy like killed and ate the person next to him.
What?
In Canada, yeah.
I never heard about this.
I think the guy was schizophrenic or something. He had a mental problem and he decapitated the guy next to him. And started eating his face.
While the bus was going? In
yeah, well, like, yeah, I think everyone else left the bus and tried to lock him in, you know, like.
Oh, so, and people saw this?
People saw this, because it was during the bus ride, I think.
Holy
and
shit.
And so we were like, man, I guess our Greyhound ride wasn't so bad after all.
Yeah, your heads are still attached, all right.
You know, like, it definitely could have been worse.
Could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, so we never took.
Wow, one of only two times now riding Greyhound, I have a very similar story to yours.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to go from Miami up to Chicago, and I wrote about this in my first book, 1,000 Days Between, part one, for a little plug. I was just trying to get to Miami, and I bought a ticket for like 9:30 p.m., and while, you know, trying to get on the bus, well, first of all, everyone just kind of shoved their way on.
Yeah.
And it's like, what the fuck? Why are you doing this when we all have tickets? Like, let's be civil
calm
here.
And, mm-hmm.
And then I realize, oh, they're shoving their way on because that bus is full and it's just going to leave.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, I went to complain. And I'm like, dude, I have a ticket that says 9:30. What the fuck? You can't just sell me a ticket for 9:30 and not give me a seat.
Right.
How is this acceptable?
And they don't
and
give
they don't,
fucks.
They don't care at all. And luckily, I got on the bus about 2:30 in the morning. This route, there were like buses every hour, and every time it was just full. It was actually because I was in West Palm Beach, which is north of Miami, and I think all the buses were coming from the Miami station.
So they were all full at that
full
point.
Already.
Oh, man.
And I'm like, are
brutal.
You kidding me? Every time I've bought a bus ticket, even in Bolivia, where the average salary is like $6,000 a year, you get a seat.
Yeah, you get a seat on that bus. Like,
your ticket has a number on it. That's your seat.
It's like, it doesn't matter if they have to pull out a bus that hasn't ran in like 6 months and they got to hurry up and make it, you know, seaworthy, so to speak. Like, they'll do it because, you know.
You buy a ticket. You have a seat. Like, how hard is that?
Yeah.
Has that ever happened on a flight? I mean, I guess we've had incidents but where people get kicked off of flights. But, you know, can you imagine that? You get a plane ticket and then everyone forces their way onto the airplane.
And, like, I think you're just like, I guess.
I guess I'm going to go tomorrow. Okay.
Yeah.
Of course not. I mean, how can this be an acceptable policy? I don't understand at all.
I don't understand it either. I guess it's just because it's lower income, so people don't have the kind of social power to be like, you know, because you got to think that some of them are trying to get somewhere quite important. They got to get there on time, right?
Right.
I can imagine how frustrating that would be. And then they treat you like shit.
Yeah.
And they don't care.
Not at all.
So my worst bus experience has been in America.
Yeah, same here. Although I've ridden Megabus a bunch of times, and they've actually been good.
I hear good things about them, actually.
Yeah.
And there's great Wi-Fi. And
yeah, well, I don't know if I'd say great, but it exists.
it exists.
Know, every now and then you can check your email or something. But it has worked. And I wouldn't say the drivers are like really nice. They're not like butlers or something, but they're pleasant.
Yeah.
They're not like rude. And I totally agree. The Greyhound drivers, all of them that I saw, they're just like not treating the people like they're human.
Yeah.
It's just like they're animals corralling them.
Well, yeah, it's because it's like you got to get that seat, right? So everyone is like trying to get in like a bunch of, dogs trying to flee a burning building.
I know. Yeah, so it's a little sad that our public transportation is so bad in our country.
It is. I mean, like, and then, you know, because another funny thing is that my husband didn't even give up because he was like, okay, well, this time we're going to do it right. We're going to take the train.
Right.
Maybe you can see where this is going.
Right, yeah.
You know, because, actually, to be honest, like, we got on the train, right? We went from Washington, D.C. back near my hometown. Kind of south of Cleveland. And so, you know, like, the Amtrak train was, like, really nice. It was roomy. You know, you could spread out. It was clean. And we're like, okay, this is great. And it left on time. So you're like,
okay,
this is
cool. Yeah.
You know, like, this is the beginning of a great thing. You know, Amtrak, awesome. You know, and then somewhere along the journey, like, we were in West Virginia, and it just stopped. And it stopped for hours.
Mm.
You know? And it kept
doing
this.
Did it tell you why?
A freight.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Freight. So, you know, that would have been nice to have kind of known. Like, I know now.
Right.
But at the time, it was just like, man, if you want to get anywhere on time or stick to the schedule, do not take.
No, you can't do it. And it's kind of, that one's not even necessarily Amtrak's fault. I've read that they just share the same tracks with the freight trains. And the freight trains get priority.
They have to. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I think private companies own most of these train tracks. And they're like, there's an Amtrak train on our track. Well, you got to go to the side and wait.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't surprise me. And they're like, but then again, like, that just makes the problem worse, right? Because then, like, you're not gonna choose train travel. You know, you're gonna do something else. Probably drive a car.
Yeah, probably.
You know,
and then you're gonna complain that the highways are too clogged up. you just can't win.
I wonder why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My hope is that we're right at the cusp of automated cars, like self-driving cars, and I really do believe that within 15 years we're gonna have it's just gonna be normal to call up a car on your phone, and it just takes you wherever you want to go, and it's much more quick and efficient than anything we have today.
So like an Uber sans driver.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, I mean, there's so many possibilities these days. Like, I never thought, like, here in Beijing, the whole boom with the Mobike. the bike shares. I never imagined that that would happen. You know, like Beijing's become like almost become a like a cycling city again.
Right.
You know, through technology.
It's gone full circle.
Yeah, so it's a pretty amazing thing. It doesn't get enough press, I think, overseas, like just how revolutionary it is.
Yeah, I agree. I've talked about this a bunch of times on the podcast, actually, but that's all right.
No.
We can talk about it
again.
No.
It's
so interesting.
It is interesting. I guess it's also just really apparent when you live here. You're just like, you know, because I was here like when there was like a lot of bicycles on the road, and then there were then cars, and then there was gyms. So, you know, and pollution, people started to get concerned about these things.
Right.
Anyway.
And now it's going the other direction.
Yeah, it's positive, man.
At least it's going in that direction. Like China's working toward reducing the pollution level.
We'll see. I mean, like, we've had some pretty nice days this year.
Yeah, we've had a bunch. Yeah. We've also had some conferences with a lot of world leaders.
let's hope that that keeps happening.
By total coincidence, the sky is always blue on those days.
Yeah, I mean, I don't... Like, the whole thing about this city, though, it can be in lockdown, you know? Like, I'm sure you've talked about this as well, like, how, like, the Hutongs are changing beyond all recognition.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is another sad... It's a kind of, like, a sad step in Beijing, I think.
It is, but I had a guy on who had a kind of a different spin on it as well. I guess tourists come here and foreigners who live here, we want to see, like, the old Peking.
Yeah.
And what it was 100 years ago.
Yeah.
And I think that's not necessarily embarrassing, but I think a lot of people who control these things, they want it to be this modern new city. And they're like, well, why are the tourists all going to these hutongs and taking pictures of these old houses? They should be taking pictures of the skyscrapers.
Do you really think that, though?
I don't know if I agree fully, but...
I mean, do you think that's like their kind of mindset? Because they must know like how kind of like... you know, architecturally, like, how amazing the downtown is, you know, like, the old district is. Like, they must know that on some level. And they know that, like, tourists come to see Gulo.
Like, yeah.
They don't come to see Sanlitun. I mean, they might want to eat and drink in Sanlitun, but they're not.
And they might wish that tourists would come to see, like, the new stuff or whatever, but it's true. Like, if you take away the Hutongs entirely, then...
the city would have nothing.
Yeah, it'd lose all of its character.
Yeah.
I'd become one of these, well, I don't know, some of the cities in the South especially that have sprung up from
nothing.
You know, and I'm sure there's great things about those places, but they don't have the history and the character that Beijing has.
Yeah, I mean, it's one reason why I've never been to Shenzhen. And people who've gone to Shenzhen tell me it's amazing. Like, they say, like, you have so much fun in Shenzhen, you should go to Shenzhen. But I'm just like, it's not high up on my list of things to places to go, I have to admit.
Yeah.
Have you been?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, see, because it just...
I'm not very interested.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, if I go on a business trip, maybe.
Right, yeah, you want to go make some money, I guess. So.
Yeah.
I mean, even Shanghai, I've been there a few times, and there's cool things about Shanghai, too.
Yeah.
The Pudong is really interesting, the French district, but the French concession, I guess it's called. But it just doesn't have the same character as Beijing. I really like living here.
Yeah, I think there's two ways to go about this whole regeneration or the kind of like the downtown scheme. One thing I've always liked about Gulo before this policy has been enacted is that like, so you can go to a bar or you can go to eat somewhere, right? But you can kind of appreciate the building for what it was. But you can also like every time you go there, you kind of interact with it. You know what I mean? You kind of notice something new about it, or you kind of notice something around it that you haven't seen before. Whereas if you're just going like as a tourist, if you're just going to like kind of explore the city, right? You just go there once, you see it, you're done.
Yeah.
There's no future kind of... So like you just interact with it once, right?
Uh-huh.
So that's why like a lot of people have like a lot of different opinions about this. Like, you know, for instance, like... one reason like Temple Restaurant Beijing is I think is successful, right? Is that like you can go there and you know, like you can kind of interact with that space, you know, and in many different ways. Like you don't even have to eat there. Like there's like a lot of art exhibitions there and you can go, you can experience that, and then you can kind of look at the old architecture. Like if you just went to that place as a temple and just as a temple, you'd only go there once.
Yeah. So you would never keep coming back.
You can keep coming back, and then you always kind of notice new things that you'd never kind of noticed before. Or like someone tells you like a little bit something about the place that like you never heard before. So I think actually like there's more, you kind of interact with a deeper way. you know, when it has like a more modern purpose.
Sure.
So, yeah. But it's kind of difficult to balance that, right? Because you also have to change the space to make it suitable.
Totally. So. And I get that same kind of feeling every time I go to the original Great Leap.
Yeah.
Just biking through those hutongs. It's always like, I don't really look at maps too much. So I'm always going by memory and take a couple wrong turns. And some of these alleys can be just like a maze.
Yeah.
And you can get lost pretty easily. And there's just always something new to see. It's like a living thing.
It is. And like something you never even noticed before. Maybe you passed by it, but you didn't see it.
Right.
And then suddenly for some reason you noticed it. Which I guess always happens to me, you know, or like you see, like even not just even like old stuff, like you see like, you know, things from the like kind of the Maoist era as well. Like you can see like some sort of slogans. Some of them are still around, although increasingly they're disappearing.
Uh-huh. And especially if you live here for a while, at least for me, as I've studied the language, I start to learn more of the characters and it's maybe I saw that sign before, but I never knew what it meant. And now I kind of can tell what it's talking about. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So how long have you lived here?
I've lived here. So this time around, I lived here for 6 years.
Uh-huh.
But I also lived back pre-Olympics. I was here in 2007 studying Chinese.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So you saw kind of both sides.
The
Olympics really changed the city.
That's what they told me. Like, at the time, I kind of just wanted to get out because it's getting pretty crazy. But the city has changed a lot. Like, there's very few things that I remember, like, especially like restaurants, bars, whatever. Very few of them have continually existed since 2007.
Yeah, it seems like almost an impossible thing to.
Yeah, well, especially when you consider now with the redevelopment, right? So many good venues are closing down.
Right. That's one sad thing, I think. But again, I've heard varying opinions on this.
Yeah.
It is, I will say, for most foreigners I know, it's like, this one's closing too, this place is closing, now where are we going to go drink?
And, right.
Yeah.
Or like they've bricked it up and now the windows are tiny and they don't let any light in, you know.
Right.
And the materials, have you noticed the materials they're using as well? I don't think they're very good quality.
They're horrible quality.
Right? So you're just like wondering, like, what's the point if you're not going to do it up?
Right.
Right.
I kind of assume that, so for people who don't know, that like the government's been coming by a lot of houses
yeah.
and restaurants that have supposedly maybe illegal windows and storefronts that have been added on to the original, and just put bricks right over the doorway, right over the window. And sometimes there's so much space between them, you can almost put your hand right between the bricks.
Yeah.
That's done so poorly and hastily.
Done so poorly, and like some of the bricks are like they're quite thin. They're like not even, they're like a few centimeters thick.
Oh,
like they're like
wow.
They're like plates. So I remember I used to live in the hutongs, and I remember they were bricking up like an alley near us, and like you would see that they were like there were such thin materials on it, and you were thinking like, how long is that gonna last?
Yeah, one swift kick and that thing falls down.
Exactly. I'm sure some of them have already like fallen down. And then, like, the window have the eaves that are, like, plastic. You mean, you've seen those, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you're just like, what are you supposed to think about that?
Not built to last.
No.
No.
So you're kind of wondering, like, what's the point of that? You know, if you're not going to do it right.
Right. Why do it at all?
Why do it at all? Hmm. Or, like, why not, like, you know, protect the things that are existing and slowly kind of, you know, change things rather than drastically just, I mean, of course that's like kind of their style though.
It is, it's totally their style. Like just quick do it and then
just
worry
it.
About the consequences later.
Exactly. It's like, oh, maybe if we shouldn't have done that, then we'll.
Yeah. I've learned that since moving here. Just that it works that way in many facets of life.
Yeah.
it's just, it's like, what's the saying? It's easier to ask forgiveness than permission.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Kind of like that.
Yeah, it's just like, we're just going to do it. And you kind of wonder, is it some sort of prestige project for somebody?
Could be, yeah.
Yeah,
who knows?
I don't know.
I mean, what one friend of mine did, again, just to throw and play devil's advocate, one friend of mine did say, well, you know, this third hutong in Dengshi Sitiao, whatever the neighborhood's called, had all of these restaurants in the hutong out on the street.
Oh, the lamb.
A lot of lamb places, a lot of chuar.
Yeah.
And that mostly got ripped out now and bricked up. But my friend made the point, like, well, for the people who have been living there in these homes for the last century, you know, they probably don't appreciate all these people from other parts of the city coming there, getting drunk and like using their bathrooms and, you know, blocking the whole alley. A lot of the time you can't even walk through it or drive, let alone drive a car through
it. Yeah. No, that has been a kind of a point of contention. Like a lot of bar owners and restaurant owners I've talked to have said that, like, you know, getting along with the neighbors is super important if you're having a business in the Hutongs.
Oh, for sure.
You know, if you make them angry, if your clientele is noisy at, like, you know, 12 midnight, you're going to hear about it.
Yeah, it's not like an Applebee's or something. Like, it's not this giant standalone building that everybody drives to in their cars and the nearest building is 100 feet away and no one lives there. It's like people live right there.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody's really bunched up together in these places.
And a lot of them happen to be, like, old people as well.
Right.
Senior citizens, right. So, you know, they're still living there.
I don't know, were people playing Mahjong outside when you came here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was this cute. You know, I actually remember Wudawing when people were playing Mahjong and Wudawing. Can you imagine that right now?
Which one is that?
Wudawing is the one, it's like, if you're at Yonghegong Station, it's the first street, it's kind of done up, and there's like a lot of boutique shops and restaurants. It's like the vineyard used to be there. And
on the way to the lake, you mean?
It's kind of like you're going west.
Yeah, okay.
And it's parallel to the Guozijian Confucius Temple Street.
Ah, okay.
So it's like one up from that.
Oh, that's okay. I call that one Hipster Hutong.
Hipster Hutong.
That was my name.
Well, there was a time when it wasn't so hipstery.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, and you could actually see old people play Mahjong on the street. So like it was kind of like a nice mixed use at that time because you saw like kind of scenes from daily life, but you also saw like kind of some really nice shops coming up, but it wasn't too full on. It wasn't nearly as bad as Nanlu Guxiang, right?
Right.
And then I remember like the first time I saw a vendor then I was like, oh God, it's the beginning of the end here.
Yeah. Yeah. You those know? Days are gone now. And
you see like people with laser pointers, you're just like, oh no.
Right. Yeah. Although that is a good, it's a product that almost sells itself because you just point it up in the air, a big laser pointer,
and
people are like, oh, what is that? And then they walk, they're like, where does this lead to? And then it leads to a guy selling laser pointers. Okay.
Come to my standing shop.
Right. Right. But outside of our building, there's usually people playing Mahjong in the afternoons, and they're all like at least 60 and up. There's one really old guy who sits in a wheelchair, and I don't think he says much or hears much nowadays.
But he's out with his friends.
He's out there. Yeah, they wheel him out and sit him out there. And it's cool to see like all these old people hanging out.
Yeah. It's so, like in Beijing, you just forget how common it is. It's like, it seems like old people here are like living the life. Like, they're out in parks dancing and, you know, they're out, you know, joining like revolutionary groups and doing line dancing and all sorts of things, right?
They're super active.
Super active. And you're just wondering like, man, it's got to be nice. Then they're all like, I'm wondering, like, is it your pension is very good? Are you like, you know, like, are you a landlord? Like,
oh, that's true. Yeah. I wonder how they got to that point.
Exactly. Cause they look pretty comfortable, like not rich, but like, they have like, their faces look free of worry.
Right.
You know?
And when they were young, times were pretty bad.
It was intense. I sometimes think about this and, you know, when you see a person in their 60s or 70s, you're like, I wonder what your youth was like.
Right.
I wonder what happened to you, you know?
Yeah, totally.
You know, like, you don't want to be like, so did you beat your teacher up?
Right.
But
it'd be interesting if I spoke better Chinese and could somehow get in.
Yeah.
Me as a foreigner just coming and asking questions, that's not going to go over well. But
plus, like, they like, I remember some of my Chinese friends said that it's hard to get their own parents to talk about it, talk about what happened. I guess they feel kind of, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of, in a way, it's like talking to someone about who's been at war.
Yeah.
Like, they're not going to talk about it.
Exactly.
Just want to put it past them.
Because it's pretty horrid from all sources. So.
Right. Yeah, so I wonder what the young generation is going to be like, though, once they get old. You know, like, are they going to be out there dancing? I just don't see it happening.
This young generation, I wonder, because it's like the first generation in a long time. Like, I can't say about the countryside, but for Beijing... And for the youth in Beijing, like, so comfortable, like this kind of lifestyle, right? Mm-hmm. Like even in the 80s or 90s, there's still like a bit of, not deprivation, but, you know, like people didn't have like a whole lot.
Well, they have more now than ever.
Exactly. On average. So much stuff.
That's absolutely true, yeah.
You know, just kind of wonder the values that they have.
Right. And then growing up without any siblings, it's always interesting just living here, just kind of seeing how people interact and how the different generations are. And
exactly.
If nothing else, it's been really interesting to be here.
It's an interesting time to be here. You know, it's a time of great social, economic change. You know, not so much political, but social and economic change.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's wonderful to see. I think, you know, I always want to see people here in the city, like, become successful, like, you know, like the salaries are like getting very good now, and you kind of hope that like they can keep on, like, nothing can be good forever, obviously, but
yeah, you know, and they've got the Olympics coming up again. That's like exciting too.
Yeah. They've only recently just stopped talking about 2008, and now we're gonna have to
now there'll be another one. Yeah, but that'll mean more infrastructure projects.
Yeah,
and I think there's more high-speed rail lines going in just for the Olympics, and
yeah,
maybe they'll get to dust off the old bird's nest and use it again, and you know,
right? Yeah,
I mean, a lot of countries, like every time there's an Olympics, really, other than China, I'd say, you 6 months after it ends, you see pictures of the whole venue, and it's just trashed. Like Brazil right now is like that.
It's kind of sad. I think my interest in the like, I think when you hear about all these scandals, and even if I don't look too deeply into it, I have to be honest, it still kind of sours you on the whole thing, really. It sours me anyway on the whole thing. So
scandals for getting the,
you know, like
the
exactly, like secure, like the city's, you know.
I was reading once about how Eurocentric it is.
And yeah,
the people who get to make decisions, I think the United States has 3 representatives out of like 200 and something, and the Prince of Monaco has one, and the like leader of Liechtenstein has one. Right?
So yeah,
there's like 3 or so tiny countries in Europe that have as much power as the entire United States in making these decisions.
It's, well, you know, when you think about the Winter Olympics too, you got to think, like, the Winter Olympics, who can, like, most of the world does not have access to like snow covered mountains that they can do all sorts of weird types of skiing. You know, so like already you're gonna be pretty Eurocentric with the Winter Olympics, especially.
Right.
I know China like is trying to make a push for, you know, like Winter Olympics, but like the gear, the cost of the gear alone must be off-putting to like the average Chinese family, right?
Oh, sure, to go skiing, right?
Yeah.
Snowboarding, any of that stuff.
So
all very expensive. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Versus like track and field or say running a marathon.
Like you don't need anything.
Yeah, you can. Just be some poor guy from Kenya who's running 20 miles a day to get water.
Yeah. You know? Turns out to be a great practice.
I mean, I'm sure it's more complicated than that. There's all, I don't want to downplay all the training people do, but you can get into it without much money.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, like, isn't that why soccer is popular all over the world?
You don't need that's a good point.
Because all you need is like a ball and a field, right?
Yeah.
You know? Specialized.
I'm a little surprised Ultimate Frisbee hasn't taken off more. I mean, it still is kind of this fringe sport. Like, Katie plays Ultimate, or
oh, really?
Did until very recently. And those who are into it are really, really into it. Have you ever played? Or?
I have never played, but I do know that, like, it has, like, a cult following.
It does. It's a little weird when you go to parties and everyone, that's all they talk about. But I will say, to get into it, what do you need? A Frisbee? One for the whole field, for the whole 2 teams, and that costs like $7. And you need goal markers, but you can just throw down your t-shirt on the field and okay, that's the line.
That's the line.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, I'd never thought about that.
Other than a big field. That's in a city, it's kind of hard to get a big field.
Yeah. You kind of wonder like why some sports have taken off and others have not so much.
Right, yeah. And soccer is like 1,000 times bigger than Ultimate, maybe more.
Yeah. No, for sure. Yeah.
So coming back to this Asia thing that you were talking about, where else did you go in Asia?
So I spent actually quite a long time in Japan. So I traveled a lot. Yeah. I mean, like as I was living, I was also traveling there as well. So And then, of course, like, everyone goes to Southeast Asia, right?
Sure.
But, yeah.
That's the beaten path, yeah. It's, Thailand.
Yeah.
Vietnam.
And, exactly. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, like, it's a beaten path for a reason.
It is.
You know? It's kind of like, you can just go there, and it's quite easy to get around, where, like, I wouldn't think Japan is necessarily easy to get around, but, although the rail pass is nice. I hope this, yeah.
Oh, yeah? Well, Katie and I are planning to go to Japan this fall.
Oh, really?
Or, yeah, we have fold-up bikes, though, and we're going to try to catch a ferry over from here.
Yeah.
Or from Shanghai. And bike around Japan for a month or so.
That's awesome. Yeah, yeah. Totally should.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have any experience, any wisdom you want to impart on us?
I have no wisdom for cycling around Japan. But depending on when you go, you know, like, you can always get, like, great tickets, like, great kind of deals on train tickets. You know, like, the slow ones, not the high speed.
Okay.
But the slower ones, right? And the slower ones are great because, as you were saying, right, like, the high speed ones, you can't really see out the window and you're not really seeing anything but, like, the kind of developed corridor of Japan, right? But if you go out to the countryside where you're cycling, so you would be going out to the countryside, likely,
yeah,
right? You get to see, like, a lot more of the local life, and you get to see, like, and it's just all going by so slowly. And Japan's got some great, I've had some great train trips in Japan where it's just, like, even looking out the train window, it's just, like, you know, like, oh, my God.
Yes. Oh, you know? Okay. That's exciting.
Yeah.
We might end up doing something like that, like, go, taking the ferry out to, I forget the name of the city, but in the south, and then taking...
Shimonoseki, maybe? Is that some?
Might be.
Yeah. That's usually where the ferries go to Shimonoseki. Or they'll go to Kobe. A lot of them go to Kobe as well.
Oh, Kobe. That rings a bell, too.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're looking at, like, where to go in Japan for on bikes. And it seems like the north has a lot fewer people. And it maybe might be better. So maybe we could even, if we don't have time to bike there, then just throw our bikes on a train and go up north.
To go up north from, if you're going from Kobe, I guess, like, you would take the high-speed train up to... Up north, you know, past Tokyo, towards Sendai. That would be definitely, yeah, because Japan is a long country. It just takes a long time to go from the south to the north.
Right, so we might cut that down on the bikes by going north by train and then south by bike.
I mean, they have like
Could
a, as far as I know, someone was telling me that, like, they don't have this anymore. I don't believe it. The rail pass. They have, like, a rail pass for the high-speed train. Actually, it's not just for the high-speed train. Like, you can go on most trains with the rail pass, right? It's, like, 7 days, and you can just ride as much as you want.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
And it saves you a lot of money.
Yeah.
And that's, like, the best way, especially if you're biking with all the distances. And then in the fall, you're going to have some beautiful foliage.
Yeah.
For sure.
Oh, I'm excited.
It's going to be good.
Totally.
I love fall. I also love fall foods in Japan as well.
The food changes in the fall?
It's just like, they, you know, like, harvest time. So they got, like, a lot of, like one thing about Japanese food is that, like, it's very seasonal. Uh-huh. And so, like, it's not just, like, seasonal as in, like, you know, the food they cook, but also, like, in just, like candy or things that come out, you know? It's like, oh, you have, like, sweet potato flavored chocolate because it's fall.
Oh, wow. That'll be interesting.
Yeah. Okay. And so, like, that's always been an exciting part. So, like, you know, like, every time it, like, the season changes, you're like, ooh, I wonder what new flavors will come out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Japanese food seems, like, really healthy, light. At least from, I've never been there. So it's just the stuff I've eaten.
In general, it is. I mean, there's some, like, kind of, you know, some things that'll pack on the pounds, of course, if you let it, you know, like the kind of thing that a salaryman would eat at, like, you know, midnight when he's drunk. That stuff's not good for you. You know, like curry rice, you know, or the tonkatsu with curry rice, or anything that's, like, got that kind of, like, heavy sauces. And, you know, and they, like, you know, like the deep fried chicken or the deep fried pork. There's a lot of that, actually.
Yeah, we've been to Korea, too.
Yeah.
And everything that I ate there seemed fairly good for you.
Yeah.
Except then they have fried chicken. And that's, like, super popular.
Yeah.
Like, huh, there's this one thing that's just kind of the big vice.
Yeah. So no, and then you know, when you eat Japanese curry, man, you're gonna smell like Japanese curry for a while. That's the worst
thing
about it.
I'll be
sweating it out. It's like this distinctive smell. I remember I had this coworker, and I knew every time he had curry the night before because I could just smell it, because it wasn't on him, it was his clothing. So like, if he had like a suit jacket and he's wearing the same suit jacket or the same jacket, even like the same coat, you could smell it.
God.
Yeah.
That powerful, like, huh?
It was potent. It's potent. Yeah. But let me know what kind of routes you're thinking of taking, because It's just some really nice...
Well, once we get done, maybe we can just take a quick look at the map.
Yeah.
Because we really don't know yet. This isn't all that well planned out, but that's just kind of our idea. Go yeah. there and then go down to Taiwan.
Yeah.
And bike around Taiwan for a bit. And then down to the Philippines. That's kind of all we have planned out.
Very nice.
And all try right. not to fly if possible for any of these.
Yeah.
Try to catch ships if we can find them.
Well, no, there'd be definitely like... I don't know if... Like, there'll be definitely ships from Korea to Taiwan, right? And then there's a lot of connections from Japan to Korea by ferry, for sure.
Okay, so we might have to go to Korea for a bit, too.
I don't know, yeah. but I do remember there's a lot of ferry options between Japan and Korea. Because Korea is sure. very close to Japan.
Yeah, they're right next to each
yeah.
other. And yeah, we've got friends in Busan, too, so we could always go back there and visit for a bit.
Although, yeah. Although, if you go to Okinawa, then that's quite easy to get to Taiwan.
Right, that's right next to Taiwan.
Yeah, yeah. but then you have to get to Okinawa, which is not easy. Hmm. So.
Okay.
But also, you can take ferries from, like, you know, Kyushu and, you know, but that takes like dedication.
Yeah. Well, how long did you live in Japan?
I lived there for 5 years. Hmm. Yeah.
Wow. So that was between your China stints?
It's all broken up.
Because I was
a student there. And then I went back after college. And then I went to China because I'm like, I want to study Chinese. And then I went back to Japan. And then I went back to China. So a lot of back and forth. There's like a lot of time split, you know.
That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, I always really like, I love Japan. But man, career options are way better in China.
Yeah.
So that's why I stuck with China.
Right. Yeah, it's a good time to be here for, especially if you're a teacher. It's just like Katie gets treated overall really well. And
it used to be like, I remember in Japan, people were saying like in the 80s, you can't even imagine the kind of money you could make in Japan, right?
Sure.
Of course, now, like, I don't even know how English teachers in Tokyo survive. I'm just like, you guys must be eating ramen every night.
Well, that's the thing. Even if you make good money in Japan, it's just so expensive there.
Well, it's not as expensive as it used to be. I'd actually consider that the prices, in, like, you'll go to Japan, you'll see the prices aren't that bad.
They're not.
They're not. Okay. Well, I mean, because they also, like, there's, like, the 100 yen stores. They get a lot of junk from China. The food isn't that expensive. There's a lot of cheap food options. I think in Japan, the biggest cost in my eyes was housing.
Oh, okay.
Housing is really priced terribly because you have, like, small space, and then you're paying a lot for that small space.
Sure.
But stuff is not that bad.
Okay. Oh, it's kind of like Beijing then, too.
It is kind of like Beijing, yeah. Except I do think, you know, like, Beijing, you can definitely find good deals. Where in, I think any major city in Tokyo, or not major city, but any major city in Japan, it's just really hard to find good deals
on apartments.
And apartments, housing. And because also they have like a lot of ridiculous fees to get you. So, for instance, like, you know, like you have a deposit, but you also have to give like your landlord money that will never ever be refunded. Like,
all right.
You know, just like a lot of weird costs associated with housing.
Okay. So we're going to avoid all of that entirely by just biking
around. Yeah. That said, though, hostels in Japan are amazing. Well-priced. And,
are they?
Yeah. And quite clean and hygienic.
Okay. Well, I'm sure we'll do some of that. We'll stay in hostels.
Yeah.
We'll have a tent, too. So we hope to do a lot of camping.
Yeah.
Just kind of, just once the sun goes down, just try to find a spot. And I imagine that's what it'll be like a lot of the time out in the countryside.
Yeah. So. No, it's, I mean, I think they have campgrounds in some place. I haven't seen it so much. But I also imagine the wilderness, who's going to see you?
Right, yeah.
You know, some hunters, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it'll be an adventure.
Yeah. Well, I wish you well on it. Like I say, your first time, you'll definitely, I think it's definitely a good option. It's definitely beautiful. It's amazing.
All right, it looks like we're coming up to our hard deadline here. You got to... Got things to do. What do you got? A wedding tonight?
Oh, a friend of mine's getting married.
Oh,
yeah.
All right. Well, congratulations on that to your friend.
Caitlin, if you're out there, congratulations.
Shout out to Caitlin.
Yeah. Getting married today.
All right. And you'll be listening to this a little bit after the wedding, but that's all right.
All right. Well, thank you.
Well, anyway, it's been great meeting you.
Yeah,
and,
great meeting
thanks
you
for
as
coming
well.
On.
No. Thank you.
Thanks to Lisa Gay for coming on the show, and thank you for listening. For more information about what we talked about today and for more of my pictures and stories and videos and everything else I do, you can go to my website, 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number, 1000daysbetween.com. See you next time.